You're listening to SBS News.
It's really awful. It's just the worst disease. And she thought she was prepared, but she wasn't, and I wasn't. And it has literally been the most traumatic time in my life.
That's Griffith Young, a 54-year-old Melbourne man. He's talking about his mother, Jackie, who at the age of 84 is battling what many call the slow goodbye, dementia. It's one of the biggest challenges for the health sector in the 21st century, with an estimated cost globally of well over $1 trillion Australian dollars.
She'd sort of been managing it, and, you know, she kept diaries and she had memory books, and she did all the right things to extend her memory. She was taking drugs to improve memory, like, you know, to slow the dementia. But yeah, in 2019, she took a turn for the worst.
Dementia is the second biggest killer for Australians and the leading cause of death for Aussie women. Associate Professor Michael Woodward, who sits on the board of Dementia Australia, is also head of aged and residential care services and the head of memory clinic at Austin Health in Melbourne. He explains why women are more susceptible to dementia.
We know that there are many more women than men who have dementia, but that's because women live longer, and the greatest risk factor for dementia is age along with family history. But even when you standardise for age, there is a slightly greater risk of developing dementia if you're a female. It's probably, again, because women are more prone to other conditions that increase the risk of dementia and of dying from dementia, such as depression, possibly other stress conditions, or possibly stress conditions, depression is not a stress condition, and also withdrawal of hormones. We've done quite a lot of studies on hormones in women after the menopause, and they're not as good for brain cells as the male menopause, or whatever you want to call it.
While there's no known cure for the disease, a new study from researchers in evolutionary medicine at the University of Adelaide has found those living in larger households are at a reduced risk of dying from dementia and could possibly stave off its progression for longer. Hilary Lee is the president of the Spark of Life program, which aims to facilitate an ideal environment and connection for people with dementia so they can experience rehabilitation and the recovery of lost abilities. She says these latest findings come as no surprise to her, given what we already know about dementia.
We know for a start that, like loneliness, for example, when people are isolated and are on their own, that can actually be a precursor to people starting to get dementia. So it's really important to have that socialisation.
Emeritus Professor Marce Henneberg is the senior author of the study. He says its findings point to the neurohormonal regulation of the brain.
We are emotional creatures. Our emotions are based on neurohormonal regulation of the brain. Dementia may be a result of the lack of certain emotions stimulating our neurohormonal regulation.
Our neurohormonal regulation was developed millions of years ago amongst early human communities, where it literally took a village to raise a child, as opposed to one main caregiver. Mum and dad, grandma and grandpa, aunties and uncles all forged a large collaborative family environment, which Professor Henneberg says created stronger neurohormonal environments.
This creates a need for emotional regulation that is positive, so that we have positive emotions towards other people. In short, love. Oxytocin is called the love hormone. We think that this collaborative, friendly, loving human relationships produce a better neurohormonal environment for the brain to function. Whereas if we make people lonely, isolate them, they obviously don't have stimulation of the love hormone, and that negatively influences how brain works.
In the stretch back across that evolution, the period where we've moved away from more collaborative caregiving has actually been quite short, meaning we're not as well adapted to the contemporary trends of small families, personal space, and individualism as we might think. Now, while the research doesn't show a causal link between the incidence of death from dementia and household size, it is clear living in large families is significantly protective against dementia mortality in terms of initiation and deterioration of those suffering with the disease. Professor Michael Woodward again.
It makes sense that living in a larger household would be a better situation for those with dementia. A similar example is seen with eating. We've always thought the Mediterranean diet protected against dementia, and it does, but it now seems that it's more than that. It's actually eating communally and preparing food communally that is likely to also protect against your risk of developing dementia.
Jane Collier is one such person who knows this all too well. She was determined to keep her husband Peter at home with their family and away from a care facility.
I think he would have declined so much more rapidly had we done that earlier on and not gone through what we've gone through. You know, we were determined from the start to try and keep him at home if we could.
Jane says her husband started showing early signs of a cognitive change not long after the birth of their fourth child. Peter, now aged 56, was then in his late 30s.
My husband, who was always very patient with the other three children, became a lot less patient. He started getting stressed more often. He got angry more often, just little things. But at the time, I just thought it was the fourth child. He can't cope, you know, it's all too much, it's too stressful, but it definitely wasn't that. There was some change happening and we were unaware at that time.
Three of Jane and Peter's four children still live with them, making for quite a full house. Their son Alistair says each of his siblings puts in an effort to engage with their father on a daily basis.
We put in time. It's mainly in afternoons after work. Or just any time you're at home, really, someone needs to be, if he's not got a carer with him, we'll put in time, have a chat to him, sit down, watch TV. Just we now know after 5 years of living with him how to keep him sort of sane and keep him happy. So we're usually when we're talking to him, we're talking all about him and what did you do today. He loves his tennis. He loves his milkshakes, coffees, things like that. So we'll just talk a lot to him about things that he loves.
Hilary Lee points out that the type of interaction that people with dementia get to experience is what's key to their prognosis.
One of the really essential things is the quality of that human connection, because you could have people around you who could maybe undermine you, be critical, especially when people have early dementia, and it can be frustrating. There's lots of potential frustrating situations that can arise. If we unwittingly start to tell the person off or kind of unwittingly remind them of the memory challenges, it can exacerbate the fear and concern they have themselves that they know that things aren't going right. So we have to be really aware that people around the person with dementia actually create their world. They create their social world and they create their very real experiences every day.
Professor Henneberg says when a traditional large household or family-centred lifestyle isn't possible, people suffering with dementia should look elsewhere to increase their positive interactions with others. This can be through neighbours, community groups or other engagements. Phil Hazel, who's now 60, was diagnosed with dementia 5 years ago. He lives with his wife Jan, who works full-time, but he says his work advocating for those with dementia has opened up a whole new community for him.
Like a lot of people, I lost most of my friends when I was diagnosed, but I have genuine friends on Twitter that I react with all day, so that's really taken the place of that. I'm often in a Zoom meeting with Dementia Australia or someone else. I have a carer twice a week who comes on Tuesdays and Thursdays for a couple of hours, and that way he can take me to shopping centre or, you know, whatever I've got to do. So that's really helpful. And that's under the NDIS.
Phil often travels through his work with Dementia Australia, and thanks to a four-legged friend, his assistance dog Sarah, Jan can now worry less about how he's getting along.
Sarah finds items around the house for me, like keys, wallet, phone, because I leave them all over the place and can't find them. But I do a lot of travel, well, before COVID, but that's ramping up again. So she flies with me. She enables me to go to Melbourne, for instance, stay in a hotel, present at a conference or a meeting. So she really gives me that independence, and that then ensures Jan has more Jan time and she can relax more because she knows that Sarah's looking after me when I'm out and about.
Tina Quinn, SBS News.